Well, good evening. We have come to the questions in Bendoa.
So some people need copies.
I have a phone, so it's okay.
Do you have one, Helen?
I have one. I don't have it with me, but it's fine.
You remember it?
Wow.
By heart, every word. Well, the interesting thing is that I'm going through it with the Shobo Genzo that Kaz did, and the words are not the same. And so, as I did last week, I'm going to share those not sameness as they come up. So it begins with an obvious question, question one. Why do you recommend just Zazen? He's just gone through some pages of talking about how Zazen is the only one, no matter what. It's the only thing. You can do all these other things, but if you're not doing Zazen, it doesn't make any sense. So they say, okay, ignorant people may question by asking, there are many gates to the Buddha Dharma, why are you saying this thing that it's only Zazen? And he says, because it's the way, it's the front gate. That's it. And they say, well, why is it the only front gate? And he says, Shakyamuni Buddha correctly transmitted the method for attaining the way, and the ancestors of India and China attained the way. Everybody sat Zazen, no matter what. So, this is the front gate, no matter what. He doesn't bring any justification for that except his knowledge that this is the way that the human mind, if it sits down quietly and begins to discern what it's doing and how the world so-called apparently around it is doing, that everything that we think and all the elaborate ideas that we build up around our life become quite transparent. We begin to see that they're just ideas and thoughts and pictures and stories and words. And it's only when we sit down and see through those and begin to experience the coming from it's not exactly coming from somewhere, but it's the being entirely present of it that we become aware of. We become very, very awake to. But it's the only way to know about it. And that's the point of those first two questions. all the different people who've studied all the different ways, including Buddha himself, all end up just sitting quietly somewhere. And sitting quietly long enough and trustingly enough to let the whole thing function as the self enjoying the self is what they say is Juyu Samadhi. Just being this, just letting and accepting everything as it comes and goes. So, rudely, question three, the questioners are pretty intense. The translation says, we understand you've studied authentically and authentically transmit the Tathagata's excellent art. However, reading sutras or chanting Nembutsu naturally can become a cause of satori. How can just sitting vainly without doing anything be a means for attaining enlightenment? So it does look like that from the outside. It looks ridiculous. It looks absurd, just sitting and looking at a wall. It does look like it's vain and absurd. It's better to be doing something like chanting or reading sutras or getting new ideas in our minds. But no, Dogen says, no, don't worry about those things. Just sit. Just sit. So he said, Dogen said, just doing zazen is already sitting peacefully in the receptive samadhi of the Buddhas. That's what Juyu Samadhi can be called, is the receptive, the mind of acceptance. Usually in one way or another, we're either going this way with our mind or this way with our mind. But to sit just upright and accept things as they are, that's a different experience. He says that calling it vain is slandering the Mahayana, and it's a deep delusion. So just do receptive samadhi. And this itself manifests merit and virtue. He says, it's pitiful that your eyes are not yet open and your mind is still drunk. Drunk on ideas, drunk on study, drunk on thinking. He says, on the whole, the Buddha realm is incomprehensible. Unreachable through intellect, through discrimination. Can't get there. Much less can it be known with no faith or trust, and with inferior insight or wisdom. So it calls on us to pull up the very best of us. It's not a thing to lie back and soak up in a hot tub somewhere. It takes a certain kind of intention, attitude, desire. Only people of great capacity and true faith or genuine trust are able to enter. People with no trust are unable to accept it, even though they hear it. And then he remembers that at Vulture Peak in the Lotus Sutra, a bunch of people came along to hear the Buddha preach and heard the first bit of it and just got up and left. And Buddha said, that's fine, let them go. It's not time for them. In a way, this is about ripening. Though that's not quite right, because I think we go in and out of ripening. Or sometimes we have moments of great ripeness and then other moments not. But he's saying, if true faith arises in your heart, you should practice and study. So it's not that you don't do that. Cause adds with a teacher. So, if true faith arises in your heart, you should practice and study with a teacher. If it doesn't, you should give it up for a while and regret not having the blessing of Dharma from long ago. And I think that's reasonable. That's how it is with us sometimes. And that's part of the way that we can trust ourselves. Just to allow. So then, I call this a riff in my notes. This long paragraph is a riff on the uselessness of chanting and reading without zazen, without having a zazen practice. And ends up with not saying that people deeply blinded by fame and profit, because their greed is exceedingly deep, are bad. He says, we must feel the utmost sympathy for them. So he I think, gives us all an escape hatch there. All these making sounds by moving our tongue, is completely meaningless. Thinking that it leads to the virtue of Buddha work, just blabbing about Buddha, opening the sutras, he says, if you can understand it, you'll certainly accomplish enlightenment. But wasting your thinking in discrimination doesn't compare to the virtue of gaining enlightenment by zazen. Intending to reach the Buddha way through stupid, ceaseless chanting millions of times is like steering a cart north and trying to go south, or putting a square peg in a round hole. So all those sounds, reading literature, continuously uttering sounds like frogs, frogs in a rice paddy. So he says, this was the case in ancient times, so why shouldn't it be true now? All the teachings are about this. What it really means is come back. Come back home to yourself. Come back to where you live. So this last paragraph, he says, you must clearly understand that the wondrous Dharma of the seven Buddhas manifests its essential meaning and is received and upheld only when the practicer matches the mind, actualizes awakening, and follows and receives the true transmission of a master who embodies the way and clarifies the mind. This wondrous Dharma cannot be fully understood by a teacher who only studies words. Therefore, immediately cease this skepticism, practice the way of Zazen under the guidance of an authentic true teacher and fully actualize the receptive samadhi, the Juyu samadhi of the Buddhas. Now, Kaz has this parsed in another way. He says, just understand that when a master who has attained the way with a clear mind authentically transmits to a student who has merged with realization, then the wondrous Dharma of the seven original Buddhas in its essence is actualized and maintained. This cannot be known by those who study words. So in that sense, if a practitioner matches the mind, it's not exactly the way that works. It's a clear-minded teacher and a student who is clear-minded as well. And when the two meet, it's just one clear mind. And that itself is the actualization of practice. So this is the essence of our practice, truly, as human beings, able to encounter the wholeness of our life in another. And our teacher can be a tree or a friend. But if your friend is someone who has been practicing for a long time and has a deep understanding of Zazen itself, and you bring your practice and deep understanding of Zazen to the encounter, then it's a fulfillment of our promise as human beings. That's what this is trying to say. A clear mind authentically transmits to a student who has merged with realization, not thought it up or gotten it in some way. It's emerging. Merging with the receptive samadhi itself. Receiving, accepting, allowing. So it's what Dogen said somewhere else about if you first you allow others into yourself, and then you allow others to allow you into them. So it's a twofold process that we go through with every encounter that we have, really. I mean, we appear with someone and we say, here's me. And often keep things at a distance. But if we get into a more intimate relationship, then there's you. That I will accept with gratitude. But that's only one step. Then I have to allow you to accept me. And that's a different step. So that's a very interesting part of our practice. And it's what grows from Zazen. It isn't anything we can impose on ourselves or anyone else. But it grows from how we live our life and how we encounter and accept, and especially how we sit. Because sitting itself is exactly that. First we come to sitting and we accept the sitting. we learn to accept the sitting. At first, I don't know about you, but I felt like I was digging my heels in and saying, you can't make me, for the first years or so. You can't make me do this, and yet I would keep doing it. And finally accepted it. But then there's that other step of allowing oneself to be accepted by Zazen. That's different. It's the same, but it's different. And both those things are a part of our practice. So, I think I'll just stop there. A note here, but I don't know what it means. That's actualizing Juyu Samadhi on page 34, which won't be the same page. I see. It's a different translation. Here it says, when one displays the Buddha mudra with one's whole body and mind, sitting upright in this samadhi, even for a short time, everything in the entire Dharma world becomes Buddha mudra, and all space in the universe completely becomes enlightenment. And cause has it that the entire sky turns into enlightenment. So, are there questions?
In a rice paddy that I don't know that I am making that.
It's okay.
It's okay not to know.
It's okay not to know.
As long as we're trying.
Yeah. That's all we can do.
It just makes me reflect on Rodney's been doing portrait drawings, and every week he comes and says it's so important to place the eyes, the nose, exactly where it's supposed to be, rather than draw this beautiful eye and it's not in the right spot.
Yes.
It doesn't matter how beautiful it is,
yeah,
or how perfect it is. You have to place it, you know, and double check it before you start doing all the details.
Mm-hmm.
But here, you know, we could be having this great intention and I'm paying attention, I'm drawing a beautiful eye, but it's not in the right spot. So,
yeah.
I mean, in a way, and I guess that's where a teacher comes in, says, you know what, you've got to move the eye.
Yeah, and it's not about behavior. So if you're thinking of making the eye in the wrong place as a wrong act,
yes,
it's not about that. I mean, we make continual wrong acts. It's, our practice is not about perfecting how we draw a face.
Mm-hmm.
It's about living authentically, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
It's how we enact our life, not what how it comes out, because we can't judge how it's coming out until we're done. You know, we can't know that we've got the eye in the right place until we've got the face there. And then we can, then what? You know, we can lash ourselves and say we're terrible people and we're not perfect. Or we can say, look at that, the eye didn't get in the right place. Let's try again. Or let's do something else. We can have any kind of reaction to it. including hating ourselves for making a mistake. But that's a mistake.
So you're right about it doesn't matter. I mean, you answered it right away,
yeah,
and it's true then.
Yeah.
Just
let it be. Thank you, Sonia.
I'm liable to forget this question. So, towards the end of your talk, you were talking about our receptive mind, and then you said that Zazen needs to accept us. Could you elaborate on that concept?
Probably not. I think it's a matter of experiencing it. It's to allow Zazen to accept us. To allow ourself to be accepted by Zazen.
Is that, I remember in one of your talks that I think I transcribed, so it's that you say, please, Zazen, come to me, come to me.
Oh, yes, I was quoting Coben.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's that mindset?
That's part of it, yeah. We have all kinds of relationships with Zazen. It's a very deep relationship.
Well, yes, I guess we do, but I never thought of it having a relationship with a process, but why not? You know, painting, drawing, that's a process you relate to.
It's all a process.
From my head, not from my... This is off the thing that Dogen was talking about us not doing. But I just wonder how much of his... how he says these things is a reaction against the types of Buddhism that he saw being practiced in his day that he considered inauthentic.
That's a good point. I'm sure it has a lot to do with that. Because this is when he first came back to Japan.
Uh-huh.
And so that's why he came back, was to do something about what he considered to be wrong practice.
Which he saw in... Well, I think he probably saw some in China, too, though.
Yes, he did. He did. And he felt that he came back with the more simple, authentic mm-hmm. practice and wanted to make sure that people understood that. And whether they actually asked these questions or whether he set this up as a question-answer, in any case, the questions are the kind of things that people would be considering mm-hmm. in the face of what he was bringing back, because it was so simple.
You know, so they would be challenging him with those questions that he was kind of ridiculing, really.
Yes, yeah, actually. Politely. Now, we must feel deep sympathy for them because they're on the wrong track. But, yeah. Yeah, that's a very good point. I'm sure that's a big part of it.
But it doesn't make it any less meaningful to me to think that. It is so important to see his emphasis on Zazen, but it... I think there is a level where I can also just see that he was really pretty keyed up about this.
Yeah.
And on a mission, really.
Yes.
And look at what he did. I mean, look at the hundreds of years and all of the life that his teachings have had. So.
Yeah. And here we are.
So what if he was a little cranky about it?
You seem to have been a somewhat cranky person. And he was sick a lot of the time. He had TB. So, especially in his last years, I think he really was cranky, and some of his talks are kind of like that. But I always think, oh, he's just got a fever and he feels bad. You know, it's tough, especially in those days. Oh, it would be not easy. Well, it's 8 on the nose.